Good afternoon, Richard.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us on 2SER.
Anytime.
Australian economy, look, we don't think it's going that well. Wages are low, GDP growth is at its lowest level since the GFC, and the Reserve Bank slashing interest rates left, right and centre. Exactly how bad is our economy right now?
Yeah, bad. And you know, all those numbers are important, but here's the main one. There's around 700,000 people in Australia who are officially defined as unemployed. 700,000.
Wow.
And even when the economy is doing well, that number falls to about 600,000. So picture the MCG, fill it up six more times. And when the economy is doing well, that's how many unemployed people there are. So we get all caught up talking about percentage changes and rates and indexes and numbers. And, you know, the simple reality is that in Australia, 700,000 people today need jobs, haven't got them, and we're not talking about it. Or to the extent that we're talking about jobs, we have a whole national conversation about building a new coal mine in the middle of nowhere in far north Queensland, which even its own proponents say would create around 1,000 jobs. Well, that's rounding error. That's nothing. And we just don't talk about it. We just don't talk about unemployment because no one's proposing to fix it. So why talk about it if no one's got a plan to fix it?
So what is the current percentage of unemployment at the moment? It's pretty low, isn't it, I thought.
Exactly. So unemployment in Australia is only about 5%. Only.
Yeah.
Only.
And when we say only, but that's, like you say, still 700,000 people.
Yeah, my yogurt's only 5% fat. Who cares? You know, there's 700,000 people officially defined as unemployed, and there's a lot more people than that are what we call underemployed or hidden unemployed. So yeah, the numbers, unfortunately, usually get in the way of our understanding of the economy rather than help us to understand it better.
But if you read what's going on around at the moment, that's only going to get worse. It seems that we're looking towards a recession possibly next year, and that would, you would think, raise unemployment figures even further. Do you believe we're heading that direction?
Oh, look, I do, and unemployment is rising at the moment, and wage growth is at the lowest levels on record, and the Reserve Bank's so worried about the state of the economy that they've dropped interest rates to record lows, 1.25%. But we just had an election which was about, do we want to have a strong economy or not? I mean, what a meaningless question. Has anyone ever said, no, I'll take the weak one?
And obviously Scott Morrison made it his mission to convince people that the Labor government were worse at the economy than they were. And he got away with it, obviously, by winning. How did he do that?
Well, because unfortunately for decades people have been trained to either tune out or nod along when people talk nonsense. I mean, let's go up a level. The Liberal Party are, you know, they call themselves the party of free enterprise. They're into free markets and small government, and they really think that the best way to manage the economy is to let the economy manage itself, you know, get out of the way, trickle-down economics, all this sort of stuff. But whenever the economy is going well, they take credit for that. It's like, well, I thought you weren't managing it. But whenever the economy is going badly, they blame someone else. You know, whether it's Donald Trump or China or the World Bank. So it's a great trick that modern politicians play in Australia. When times are going well, take credit. When times are going bad, blame someone else. Which is it?
exactly. And there was a big article. As soon as we all got finished mourning after the election, there was an article that I sort of passed around my social media basically saying that some people were glad that the Liberals got back in, because if the economy does tank in the next year, which of course is not going to be good, there's going to be a lot of people that really suffer from that. But if you can take any sort of silver lining from it, is that they can't hide from this one. They won't be able to say or blame anyone else.
Oh, who knows? Like, you know, I'm more cynical than most. Perhaps, you know, in 3 years' time we'll be into a, you know, some sort of scandal or other, or having a war, or who knows what we'll be doing. But no, politicians, that's a real skill to tell people what to focus on and to get them to focus on it. But, you know, let's be clear. I mean, the reason all this matters, this is not just politicians having fun. Australia is one of the richest countries in the world. We live at the richest point in world history. And we're told repeatedly that Australia can't afford to have a health system as good as the one we used to have. It can't afford to have an education system as good as the one they have in Finland or Sweden. We can't afford to have a public transport system as good as the one they have in Germany, when, again, we're one of the richest countries in the world. We can afford to do anything we want. But the real trick in all of this politics is to make rich people feel poor and to make a rich country feel poor. And that's okay. We can impoverish ourselves. We can keep cutting taxes, and we can keep spending less and less money on essential services. But when we do that, we're really affecting people's lives. Kids are not getting as good an education as we can afford to give them. Sick people are not getting as good a health treatment as other countries give them. And that's why elections matter. That's why democracy matters. We have these choices to make. But the econobabble is used to tell us we don't have choices, when of course we do.
And your book, Econobabble, as you mentioned, is makes economics more straightforward and easier to digest. One of the problems that you have with politicians is that they like to use that complex economic jargon to sort of keep people out of the debate and sort of silence them by making the topic seem too intimidating. I actually think that Labor really shot themselves in the foot with this by bringing up conversations around things like franking credits that did shoot themselves in the foot because it got a little bit too complex for people.
Look, I think there's truth in that. But at the same time, I think that, you know, I think successful political parties driving reform need to be able to walk and chew gum. We do need to be honest with people about what our reform agenda looks like, but that's different from talking about the complexities of that reform agenda day in and day out. So I think it was honest of Labor to say, look, if we get elected, we're going to change the tax treatment of something you've never heard of, called a dividend imputation credit, and it's don't worry, it's not going to affect 96% of Australians.
Yep.
But what we are going to do is offer free childcare for everyone earning up to $70,000 a year. What we are going to do is, for the first time, provide completely free cancer treatment to all Australians. So I think it was honest of Labor to spell out what their plans were. I think it was a mistake to get trapped into talking about the details of the revenue side of the ledger rather than explaining to people that, hey, we can behave like a first world country again. Relax, people. You know, if your mum gets cancer, you don't have to choose between your mum and your mortgage payments. We're a rich enough country that's going to step in to help you if that happens. And, you know, I think Labor got distracted from talking about what it would be like to, you know, what it'd be like for ordinary Australians to live in a rich country again. And yeah, as you said, probably got stuck in a conversation about econobabble that few people understood.
Yeah. I mean, we're all dissecting it now, and I saw your article around all that and trying to explain how it all happened. And it's very interesting. If people want to check it out, look it up. I think it was for The Monthly you wrote that.
It's out in this issue of The Monthly. Yeah. I'd written an essay on why Labor won, and I had to pulp that one and write one on
You'd already written it.
Lost. I make this confession in the second essay. So, yeah. I'd written 90% of it. I thought I'd just... Yeah. Dust it up on the night and finish it off in good time. Didn't go according to plan.
Your most recent book, Dead Right, How Neoliberalism Ate Itself and What Comes Next. You say that the only people who have benefited from neoliberalism are the wealthy. And they're the ones that only advocate for neoliberal politics when it suits them. It's the crux of it, isn't it? I mean, the wealthy almost, you know, voted single-handedly for Labor, but it wasn't enough because they were only looking at it from their own point of view, which, why were they voting for Labor?
It was a confusing election result.
It was.
So Labor went to the election saying, look, we're going to close some tax loopholes. We're opposed to tax cuts for high-income earners. We're going to collect a lot more money from high-income earners, and we're going to spend it on services for everybody. And there were big swings to Labor in all the wealthier electorate.
Yeah.
So if it was a class war, it kind of backfired because wealthy voters seemed to really like it. Labor's problem was that people in low and middle income electorates weren't persuaded. And, you know, I think a big part of that is they didn't really understand or didn't really believe that that the Australian government might offer them free childcare or free healthcare. So yeah, the election result was a bit weird. But no, in Dead Right, I make the point that the Liberal Party are often accused of being kind of rabidly free market and, you know, fundamentally opposed to government spending and fundamentally opposed to government investment in infrastructure. And it's obviously the opposite is true. The so-called free marketeers and the Liberal Party want to subsidise coal mines, they want to subsidise coal-fired power stations, they love to subsidise private schools, they love so-called private schools, they love to subsidise so-called private hospitals. So the idea that one side of politics always wants to spend public money and one side of politics never wants to spend public money is absurd. The issue is, what do we want to spend the money on? Do we want to subsidise renewables or do we want to subsidise coal? Do we want to put more money into everyone's schools or do we want to give more money to the wealthiest schools? It's a democracy. We can do anything we want. But rather than have honest debates about it, we talk about economics.
Yeah. Yeah, and just selling it the right way, you know, it just seems like the art of it comes down to how you can attract the side of the line that we think with the most votes just by spinning them those words that they want to hear. It's becoming a bit tiresome, to be honest, coming up every election to these buzzwords, these jargon words that just seems to win elections.
Look, indeed, but look, we're a democracy. We've got a constitution, and there's no mention in our constitution about, you know, having designing good policy or being fair or tackling. It's a democracy. If we want to make dumb decisions, no one's going to stop us. if we fall for this nonsense and then vote for the same party again, that's okay. You know,
we get another go in three years,
and again, there's nothing in the Constitution says we have to be nice to each other.
Yeah.
Nothing in the Constitution says that we should, protect ourselves or future generations from the harmful effects of our decisions today. We can be as nasty and greedy and short-sighted as we want, and hopefully some politicians are better at others at convincing us that something better is possible. And if we look around the world, the Scandinavian countries are not much richer than Australia, but boy, they've built different societies than we've chosen to build. There are alternatives.
The question is,
do we want to pursue them?
Well, very good question to leave this on. We've got to run, unfortunately. But Dr. Richard Jenness, thank you so much for joining us on 2SER.
Thank you.